You're listening to the newchurches.com
Q&A podcast. We're having a fabulous day today. I'm your announcer working here with Daniel M.
All right. Is that the voice you used when you went on NPR this morning?
No, it's not.
You know what that reminds me of? When I'm at a Disneyland kind of place, and then there's that musical DJ ride.
Hi, welcome everybody.
Yeah, we're playing hits
all day and all night. Here's Resurrection Band. How'd this get in the stacks? Oh well, here's hoping. If you recognize that, you listen to a very specific niche of music in the 80s along with me. Sorry.
All right, well, today you're hearing some audience because we are with a live audience at Exponential.
We have a sign. We force them to applaud or else we give them bad Bluetooth speakers.
Yeah, we created a neon sign that said applause just for this event.
Right next to the book that says five silver bullets.
Hey, Daniel's, you're just jealous. Book. Your publisher didn't bring one.
That is true. That is true. I don't have a book out yet.
Well,
it's coming out in September.
Do you know
what it's called?
I do.
Tell me.
Something about being outraged.
It's Christians in the age of outrage, bringing out our best when the world is at its worst.
Ding!
Ding! Sorry, we have a little ding every time someone does a little product placement.
Yes.
So, it's like a bad Bluetooth speaker.
All right. So, we have a question today from Kyle. So, Kyle, why don't you come on over and we'll get going.
All right. Ed, first of all, I just want to say you have a very beautiful voice.
Thank you, Kyle.
And, mostly I follow you on Twitter, so this is a real treat for me. I'm totally smitten.
I really kind of feel uncomfortable at this point. I don't really know how to respond.
Just had to be said.
What is your name?
My name is Kyle McCallum.
I just need that for the restraining order. Where are you from?
So I'm from the Akron, Cleveland area, Xenos Christian Fellowship, a Xenos plant. So we had the
I did your meeting.
We heard you speak a couple years ago at our summer student. That was
back
amazing.
In the day. You were there?
I was there.
Awesome. Yeah. Good deal. Yeah. And so if I ever in that area, I'll remember. Let me get a little quick picture to give it to the authorities. But go ahead. No, tell us your question.
Yeah. So if you know anything about our church, which you would, we're a little rough around the edges in the sense,
say the least.
Yeah. Okay. you'll come and you'll see a lot of people smoking, people are drinking, not at the church.
Smoking and drinking. Oh, no.
And you might, heaven forbid, hear some cussing.
And that's from the pastors.
Yeah. So it's, unique to say the least.
Yeah.
And a lot of that, is because, our growth is primarily coming through convert growth, 80%+, which as I understand, is pretty rare.
You would be among the highest.
Yeah, and so there's unique challenges to that too, but as a result, you get that rough around the edges kind of thing. So my question is, comparing convert growth and transfer growth, is this something really to keep in mind in a church plant? Should you be aiming for convert growth or should just, don't worry about that, just trust the Lord, let what happens happens, or, should we set goals to that end?
Yeah, it's a great question, and thank you for asking it. And I would say, first, let me just say about your movement. First of all, Daniel and I, just so you know, we don't drink in front of others, or at all, I should say. And, smoking basically built our denomination. So tobacco is we're sort of confused at what sin is. 50 years ago, it changed. All the deacons standing in front of the churches were smoking the products. But anyway, so just so you know, it's a movement in and around, organization in and around Ohio. Well, really more than that now, but kind of started there, had some connection. Do you still have connection to Trinity Evangelical Divinity School? Still have the center there. You go to TEDS, so they go to TEDS. So mainstream evangelicals, but really driven by reaching through church planting and cultural engagement, people who don't follow Christ. And they have a remarkably high conversion rate. Now, so let me start in general by saying that I think that church planting is becoming less evangelistically passionate year after year. I actually have research to back it up. We actually looked at, and we released it here at the Exponential Conference where we're recording this just a few years ago. I guess it was 2 years ago, didn't we?
It was 2 years ago.
And we put this kind of together. And what we found is church plants are getting larger with less converts. And that's not the way it's supposed to happen. And so what's happened though is, we love being exponential. We're for exponential, but walk through the halls. And what's happened is Adam Smith would talk about the invisible hand of capitalism, that we have created an industry called church planting right now in the US and around the world. So we have ways to do it. We got technology, tools, resources, people help you. And so whenever there's a need and people start wanting to do something, the invisible hand of capitalism comes and people monetize it. And when people monetize it, it gets better, it creates a system, it's more effective and it's more efficient. But at the end of the day, sometimes the system takes over the mission. Now, we have to be super careful because I think you can plant a church today without evangelism, and I think you'd be doing it wrong. And so I think ultimately what movements like yours and one of the things you guys, I actually have some studies you guys have done of yourself and others. And so Calvary Chapel was one that had a high conversion rate and others. So what those have in common is a deep and abiding passion for evangelism. My hope is that, and my intent is that we're going to, the Billy Graham Center, I went there a year and a half ago, left where Daniel and I worked together at Lifeway, so we could pull Christians, evangelicals and others to a greater sense that we need to be evangelistically passionate. So answer your specific question. You guys, not all of your churches have 80% conversion rate, but it goes different places. I would try to shoot for, as a church planter, now 80 is probably very high. I would try to shoot for 50%. And if the church planters at Exponential got 50% conversions in their current attendance, it would change the shape of North America and the world. Because typically it's much lower than that. What they're attracting is kind of the dissatisfied young people of established churches who want to do church in a more cool way. My call of Jesus is not to move people into cooler churches. My call is to reach people for the good news of the gospel and then disciple them and congregationalize them in a community. What would you add to that?
Yeah, so if 80% of your church is conversion, what is the size of your church?
We're at about 250 right now.
About 200.
College age.
Okay.
They let a lot of college students in the movement.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. That's awesome. So if you look at, I don't know if you've done much research on organizational life cycles and what happens with just, I mean, this is not necessarily within a church context, but in a just organizations in general, and you look at different trends that happen and different patterns that you can learn from as the organization grows from infancy toward maturity and all the way through. So as you guys start with this, As you start with this, 80% conversion growth and a lot of college students, one thing that you just have to be aware of is, hey, there is going to come a point, if not already now, where people are going to be like, oh, I came to Christ a couple of years back. I need to grow deeper, or I need to mature more. I need to quote unquote be fed, and some of them might end up actually leaving because the focus of your church is reaching the lost. And there's a sense of they're going to say, Oh, well, the church was great for what it was, and I'm very indebted toward it, but I need to grow. And there's going to be this tension where a lot of people who came to know faith, they may actually take you guys away from your original focus on focusing on reaching the lost, because they are the ones that actually came to faith. So there will be that pull. So it's you guys as a church making that decision. Hey, what are we going to do to address that? Right? Is our call to continually reach the lost? And if our call is to continually reach the lost, well, then these are our values, right? These are the values that we have that we need to emphasize. But even in the midst of those values, what does it look like for you to actually develop self-feeders all the way throughout? So that instead of, it's interesting, Ed, you talked about the whole capitalistic. I mean, I think
that's the nerd stuff I like to bring.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's really fascinating, because even if you look at the idea of churches and this whole notion of, oh, I came to faith, can you feed me? It's very consumeristic, right? And in order to develop these individuals who came to know faith even deeper in their walk with God, you need to teach them how to be self-feeders. And one of the ways that you help them become self-feeders is for them to actually not just say, hey, now I'm a Christian, now I've been a follower of Christ for a couple of years, now I got to do something else. No, bring them, put them back in the field and help them continue to grow that way, because that'll actually keep their pulse on what what happened in the first place.
They have found, some of that where people sort of go to the cooler church, and that community, cool is the wrong term. Sometimes the word in-depth church, a little less messy church. Yeah. There are movements, a messy movement. And when I think about Xenos, and actually several others, I mean, sometimes, some churches are really focusing on reaching lost people. I always think of a poem, which is probably going to surprise you. I've never actually quoted a poem, but right here, Sam Shoemaker from the Oxford Group, which is a very famous historical thing.
Can you twirl your mustache while you do this?
This is a serious moment, and you're acting foolish.
Come on, man.
All right.
You've never quoted a poem before.
Listen to what it says. I stand by the door. I neither go too far in nor stay too far out. The door is the most important door in the world. It is the door through which men walk when they find God. There's no use my going way inside and staying there when so many are still outside, and they, as much as I, crave to know where the door is. And all that so ever many may find, is only the wall where the door ought to be. They creep along the wall like blind men, with outstretched groping hands, feeling for the door, knowing there must be a door, yet they never find it. So I stand by the door. And it goes on, and it goes on actually for a while. It says, go in, you saints, go all the way in, go way into the deep cavernous cellars, way up to the spacious attics in this vast roomy house. This is where God is. And it goes on, go to here. It says, but my place seems closer to the opening, so I stand by the door. So, and it goes on from there. And what it says is kind of a key thing, right? It says, I admire people who go all the way in, but I wish they would not forget how it was before they got in. Yeah. Then they would be able to help the people who have not yet even found the door, or the people who want to run away again from God. You go in too deeply, you stay in too long, you forget the people outside the door. So I stand by the door. He said, I'd rather be a doorkeeper, so I stand by the door. Mm. And so I think of movements like Xenos. And, you know, I just remember the seeker movement sort of had its thing and isn't really much of a thing anymore. But, you know, my tribe is a little more theologically driven, and I'm never really a seeker person. But I got to tell you, I would hear all these snarky criticisms from people in my denominational family against the seeker movement. And I just said to myself, and they stand by the door. Yeah, we go in, we have our theological fights and arguments and got to, you know, how many angels dance on the head of the pin, but they stood by the door. So what I would say is, I would like to have more of you. And I think ultimately what we've kind of lost today with the passion of evangelism is the messiness. I mean, walk back with me to 1970s Calvary Chapel. It was a mess. Or come hang with me in John Wimber, Mother's Day 1980, when you actually watch the video, they would say the Spirit of God moved and they got a greater passion to reach people. Or come with me to the Hope Chapel movement, and it's a mess. Come with me to some of the church planting movements around the world. I'm preaching. I never preached before. I think an audience does this to me.
Is good.
But I stand by the door. Listen, I am at the church right now that is far in. I preach every week at the oldest extant megachurch in the world. And the reality is, with 3,750 seats and a beautiful organ and everything else, is that sometimes it's easy to forget that someone needs to stand by the door. So you go. 80%, man, if I could get people to do 50%, that would be amazing. But I just love what you're doing, and I appreciate you guys so much.
Thank you.
So, awesome. So that was
my sermon.
That was very sermon-esque.
Where? And outside was, the door. Yes. Thousands of them, millions of them.
You know what I just...
More important for me, one of them, two of them, 10 of them, whose hands I intend to put on the latch. So I stand by the door and wait for those who will seek it. I'd rather be a doorkeeper, so I stand by the door.
And the pipe organs start playing.
It's not really organ speech. It's not
okay,
really,
but you know what I wish all of our listeners could have seen? The way that you used your hands to conduct the symphony of the poetry that you...
I was being very serious and you're mocking me in front of people.
Thanks for listening to the newchurches.com Q&A podcast.
I hate you.